My name is Sean O'Hara. I am the director of the Hollywood Museum of Art. I was raised on St. Louis Heights as a boy. And more importantly for the people who are listening, I went to University Lab School as a school student.
You graduated from there.
That's right. Yeah, my dad's a professor at UH.
Oh.
Yeah. He still is after 50 years, amazingly enough.
What does he teach?
Vietnamese. And he's head of the Indo-Pacific Languages Department.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, so he's been there for a very long time. So I kind of grew up in an academic environment. You know, Hawaii, when I was growing up, was pretty, I wouldn't say divided, but, you know, you lived in your own space, right?
Yeah,
you didn't cross over.
Much more so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the you know, it's bad that all the property prices have gone up, but I guess the good thing is it does mix us up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you have to live everywhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, and then I left Hawaii in 1986 to go to college. So I went to Harvard as a music major, but really quickly I realized that maybe being a harpsichordist and a composer wasn't the best career choice for someone who wanted to eat food or
raise a family.
Do anything, yeah. So I thought, well, what would have been what would make more sense? And so I thought about my younger days at the museum as a student here at the Academy of Arts. And I thought, oh, I'll do art history.
Really?
Because it was something, they were the nicest days of my life growing up. And so I thought, well, you know, what am I going to do for a career? 40 years of my life, what am I going to do? Oh, I could work in a place like the Academy of Arts. So that sort of set my trajectory.
Hmm. Yeah. I guess someone interested in harpsichords is interested in history.
Yeah, you know, so I've told this story before, but my mother would drop me off very early. She was one of those quite severe mothers, and you know, the kind of person that shows up 5 hours before an airplane kind of thing. So I remember having picnics in Sans Souci at like 7 in the morning, you know, to beat the rush. So I would be dropped off my 11 o'clock classes, 11:15 here at the Academy of Arts. She would drop me off at like 9:15. So I would spend a couple hours wandering the galleries and killing time. And then
before what class?
Before usually painting or ceramics. That was pretty much it, painting or ceramics. And then the classes ended about 1:15, and of course my father would probably pick me around 3:30. So I had another couple hours to wander around the galleries.
What did you like?
Well, you know, I would choose a different period or gallery every week. I liked the Chinese garden because it had fish. But I would go around the galleries visiting different parts of the world. And I spent so much time here as a child that it was an education in itself. And that sort of set the tone, I think, for a lot of things, not only my career, but also kind of like my value system, my view on the world, my aesthetic taste. When I went into art history, I decided to do English medieval art. But my great passion was Japanese 18th century art. So,
why did you do English art?
Because I knew French, and I could read Latin and English, and I knew English. So it made it doable from that perspective. But also, a lot of the great discoveries are usually in areas that people assume they already know a lot about. And English art was just one of those areas that had been studied a long time ago, but really had not had any sort of recent research done on it. So it made sense that that English art would be one of those areas I could study. The other thing was, when I was a musician, I loved 15th, 16th century English music. So to study the art was just a way of extending that interest. But that was a kind of an academic interest as well. My great love was Japanese art. So I kind of had this Hapa view to the world, which of course was, a lot like the museum.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, at the time it was really more East and West, and mm-hmm. And when I got the job here, my mother said, "Oh, it's a Hapa director for a Hapa museum."
Yeah.
Yeah, and I should say I feel very fortunate, you know, having been raised in Hawaii and understanding deep down what this place is about, but then having gone away for so long, I mean, 31 years is a very long time, and to sort of cleanse one's mind and to sort of learn about other models, and I lived in Europe for most of that time, and so, you know, you see other countries, other approaches, you know, these are all countries that love their art museums, love their culture, love their food, love anything that's, you know, related to civilization. And then to come back to Hawaii and to sort of apply all those things that I've seen and learned on this institution that I love so much is a privilege and kind of lucky, you know, because when do you get that sort of chance to be able to do that? And
so I'd really like to see how, in your mind, in the last year, you've kind of linked it all.
So, you know, so one of my dirty little secrets is I spent time in business. After my PhD in art history, I ended up working in London in finance and investment and hedge funds and things like that. And so I learned a lot about the way businesses operate and how they serve their clients and so on and so forth. And so when I see these institutions, I kind of think about the audience, and I think about, you know, who they are, how do they physically connect with the institution, why are they here, why would they come here in the first place? And so for me, that's the easiest way of organizing my thoughts about an institution like this.
What are the answers here?
Well, there's good and bad, right? The difficulty, if I can start off with that, is that, you know, it's the sort of finding the institution and getting in the institution and parking and all these sort of things that we deal with in Hawaii. So it's about an audience that can actually get here. It's about an audience that has the time to come to a museum. Because another problem with the museum is you have to go to museums. We do have outreach programs. Museums do have things online. But really it's about physically coming and experiencing the institution. So audiences that have time and have a certain amount of... they have a lifestyle that allows them to go to museums. I think that's an audience and a lot of them are the baby boomers, for example.
Well, so you've said that the audience that we've had are people who have time and can actually find the place.
Yes, yeah, that's what it comes down to in many cases. Or school children who have a certain amount of structure in their schools. And it allows for them to visit, or we have a lot of students who are homeschooled, and so this is a way of learning about other parts of, you know, life and culture, and so we get a lot of those sort of students. You know, our job is to connect everyone with this institution, and now that schools have and the education system has eliminated a lot of the art and culture in the system, we're sort of responsible for a lot of that in Hawaii. It's about making that happen in a structured way. We have one of the largest art schools in the country. We teach thousands of students art and art history. You know, I think back in my childhood, when I was going to school, I was taken to the museum as part of my schooling. And I think that's not so common now. And so my one of my objectives is to make the museum just a normal, regular place. I know it sounds odd. I don't want it to be seen as special. I want it to be seen as normal. You know, a bit like people go to school or people, you know, go to the supermarket.
Try to imagine that.
Well, you know, the thing is, we're on an island, and so there's an interesting dynamic. you can't leave the island as easily as someone on the mainland can drive to another state or even drive to another country. And so the institutions that represent the world and, you know, many different cultures, these institutions are essential for people's cultural educations, for quality of life. And I think the more people know about the offerings at the museum, where they can visit China, or they can visit India, or they can visit France, you know, the more they learn about those offerings, I think the more they'll come to appreciate why we're here. There aren't that many institutions, if you really think about it, that represent the world in Hawaii. There are institutions that have specific missions. You know, it might be the, you know, the Japanese Cultural Center, or it might be the, you know, the Bishop Museum in the Pacific, for example. But we were one of the first institutions, and we're still one of the only institutions that represents the entire planet, at least the planet of civilizations. And so we have a role in the quality of life of people in Hawaii, as well as education, as well as advancing art and culture in our community.
You wouldn't think there'd be a problem motivating people to get their butts in here.
Yeah,
but
what does
make people come to museums?
I think a lot of it is a certain amount of marketing.
What kinds of things these days?
Well, I think a lot of it is sort of name recognition. I think that if people hear in the press about, you know, Jackson Pollock, and they know that we have, you know, a Jackson Pollock painting in the exhibition, the first one to be on the island, you know, people will be sort of interested and say, well, I've heard about this guy. You know, maybe I should go and take a look. Sometimes it has to do with people's cultures. For example, we just had a series of events based on Filipino culture, and so, you know, maybe people who have an interest in that would come. There are a lot of groups that we partner with. We're fortunate to have both a fabulous collection and a beautiful setting, and of course a beautiful climate.
And
a great cafe, great food, absolutely, a fabulous shop, and great architecture too. Mm-hmm. I've worked in museums where we've had old buildings and we have new buildings, and again, we're just in the position, the great position, to have a building that is beautiful, was kind of built in the right era, you know, where they favored things like courtyards and a type of architecture that it's an invention. The architecture of the Academy of Art building, of the Holland Museum of Art, is an invention of a lot of different, made up of a lot of different styles. It's kind of like the plate lunch of architecture, but it's beautiful for that reason. So you have Chinese windows, and you have Roman stucco, and you have all these sort of all these sort of elements all thrown in together.
How would you see the programming thrust, I guess, for the museum?
So the programming thrust right now because museums plan out their programs several years out, my arrival hasn't really changed the immediate programs. But where I think the museum is going a couple of years, a few years from now, is twofold. One is to really emphasize the fact that we are in the middle of the Pacific. We're never going to move away from that. We're called the Honolulu Museum of Art. And so therefore, we have a mission in this world to promote and present and to collect and to research art and culture from our vicinity and from the Pacific. And when I say the Pacific, I'm talking about the countries in East Asia, the countries up in the north, North America, South America, and the like. This is our neighborhood, and it makes a lot of sense that we're known for being a museum in the middle of the Pacific. You know, we attract a lot of visitors, and the visitors, you know, when they come to the Honolulu Museum of Art, there's a certain amount of expectation, and so we have to meet that expectation.
I think the expectation now is for the Asian component, right? Not as much for the South American or even North American.
Yeah, that's right. But I think that we, you know, are part of the U.S. We are part of Polynesia. We are part of, our cultures are from the Pacific Rim and East Asia. Yeah, I think we need to represent all of those cultures. And we're working on a number of projects with curators in New Zealand. We're working with curators in Japan. We're working with curators in California. So I think it's natural that we go in that direction. You know, versus being experts in Russian art or, you know, something like that. You know, although having said that, Russia is actually part of the Pacific Rim. So. So that's one thing. The other thing is that we are a fabulous museum, and we always get the comment when people visit and they didn't know much about us, that they didn't expect to see such a wonderful museum. And I'd like to really work with other organizations to sort of promote Hawaii as a place that's just beyond the sort of the, you know, sun and surf and sunburn holiday, that we're about culture, we're about people, we're about everything that goes along with the diverse communities that we have here, like food and art and music. And
who do you think would be your good community partners in getting that kind of message out?
Well, recently I've been speaking to the folks at the symphony, and the ballet and the opera and Iolani Palace at the Hawaii State Art Museum, at the Hawaii Theater, at University of Hawaii. I mean, there are so many organizations that make sense to partner with. We're working with the Honolulu Biennial, for example. These are all organizations that offer super high quality cultural presentations, but it's not easy if you're promoting it individually. I feel that working together as a group might allow us to make people notice that we're here and we exist, and tourists that come from places like mainland China will often come here for culture and things that are beyond just getting sunburned on a beach. And so I think it's making those connections and maybe moving Hawaii away from that image of an island without a lot to offer in terms of culture.
Do you find it a little odd there's no, say, arts council here, sort of a, you mm-hmm. know,
Yeah, actually, a lot of people find that odd, and I've been on arts councils on the mainland, and so I did find that a little strange. But I think that just the mere fact that we're all talking is probably going to start something like that, mm-hmm. Even if anything, in an informal way. I think we're one thing I've noticed in the last 30 years is that there is this kind of change in what we have to offer people. I think growing up there was maybe a lack of confidence. You know, there was, you know, oh, it's always better elsewhere, and you know, what do we have to offer, kind of thing. But I think that now that we, you know, are dealing with climate change and the Vogue, which we don't talk about, and the fact that we're the most expensive city in the United States of America, because of all of that, you know, maybe we can't compete with Phuket or you know, South Africa or these other places that have beautiful beaches and less expensive environments and so on. But what we do have, I think, is our culture and our people. And we're, you know, one of the most diverse communities on the planet. And we have such rich cultures to offer people, fantastic art from all over and food. And so I think that that's, that needs to be our selling point.
You know, as you look at your first year here,
yeah.
I mean, what sort of stands out to you? Maybe some key points that.
For me, it was about understanding the arts environment here in Hawaii, and so.
How would you describe it?
how would I describe it? I don't know, the word kapakahi comes to mind, you know. It's kind of all over the place. As you say, there's no arts council, so it's not really that unified in many ways. You know, it is in the sense that, you know, we're all on an island and we all need to paddle in the same direction.
Limit on the kapakahi-ness, but
yeah. But you know, my view is we're all in the same canoe, so we all have to paddle in the same direction, right? So I'm really learning about this environment and seeing how I can navigate it with this institution, because we're one of the largest, if not the largest, cultural institution on this island, and it's our responsibility to work with our partners to make sure that we develop our arts community in the best way we can, and not by dictating it, but really by being helpful and working with other people. I mean, it's in our mission ever since the beginning in 1927 that we are also here to encourage and develop artists and the artist community. So to me, that means that you know, we have to use everything in our power to advance what we have here in Hawaii. And you know, make the outside world know more about what we have to offer. We're a 90-year-old institution, which means in 10 years we will be 100. And that's a great opportunity for any institution. And so you have to have a plan for that as well. So there are a lot of reasons why we would need to plan. And I feel that the other organizations and other community groups are in the same situation. And so, you know, again, seeing that we are facing you know, changes in the climate, changes in the economy. I'm hopeful that we can work also with our leaders in the state to sort of come up with a long range plan. I mean, you know, they've got the rail project. That's a long range plan. You know, we're eventually going to run out of space. That needs to be a long-range plan. Run out of water. That needs to be a long-range plan. So there's a lot of reasons for planning, and so that's kind of what I've spent my my year doing is figuring things out, not assuming anything, but learning about the opportunities and the challenges, and the, you know, the dynamic of being on an island. And there are also a number of things that I also wanted to figure out, and that was coming up with a sustainable model for this organization and the arts community in general. I don't feel that museums and arts organizations are always sustainable and viable. Part of that has to do with the changing economic environment, the changing audience. As we were saying, younger people probably don't view museums the same way older people do. So you have to come up with a model that is viable and sustainable, because we're one of the institutions that has to keep going, no matter what.
Have you come up with one?
Well, I have an idea of what it looks like.
Hmm.
Because of my financial background, I tend to look at ways of earning revenue and supporting operations using a sort of diverse approach to make sure that the institution it never has all its musubis in one basket. I'm developing a pretty good idea of what I think our institution needs to look like in order to be sustainable, where it has a sort of mixture of activities, a mixture of support, and then now I have to figure out how we get there.
What would some of these revenue streams be, you think?
Well, based on other institutions that I've worked at, for example, the internet is a very important part of the distribution network for images, and museums own lots of images. So there might be opportunities there for our images to be out there and to be used by other people, for example. Other revenue streams would be people like to come here for events, and they like to come here to celebrate things, and so how do we help them? How do we participate in those sort of events? By the way, I'm not just referring to earning money. I'm also referring to people giving money.
Currently, how's the how's the museum's fiscal pie divvied up?
Well, the museum it has an endowment which supports approximately 20% of its operation. The museum relies on donations and estate gifts. It relies on tuition from activities and classes.
So donations and gifts are about what percentage of the total?
It's probably about a third. It's approximately a third, even though I said the endowment was a little less, but it kind of runs around.
And so the school, the education component, would be the other third.
Yeah, part of that. The problem is that you have to have revenue sources that you can count on, and a lot of the revenue sources that we see are sometimes based on good fortune. For example, if someone dies and gives us their estate or house, that's good fortune. And of course, Hawaii is changing. When you look at the sort of distribution of wealth in Hawaii, it used to be concentrated in fewer entities, and now it's more spread out in many ways. And we have now outside entities that own hotels and other things, and so it's a changed landscape, and so we have to, as an institution, sort of change with that landscape. We have to work maybe with more donors who are going to give us fewer gifts, for example, or we have to come up with other sources of revenue. I'm very optimistic because as an institution, we're actually better off than most.
But you're in the black.
Yes, yes. But I would also say that having been raised in Hawaii, I'm always slightly concerned about resources. I have a healthy pessimism, if I can say that. We were very fortunate, and of course we're very grateful to receive a grant and aid grant from the state of Hawaii for a total of $2.2 million, and our legislative leaders, Senator Taniguchi and Representative Bilotti, they worked very hard with their staff to help us with this. And this is a grant that will help expand our education facilities. We would like to use that as a way of also adding art exhibition spaces. And so we're
on the Lina Kona property.
We might move it to this property on the main site here, only because if we were to build on state property, it might make it a little more complicated. Mm-hmm. But what it also helps achieve by expanding this property is that, and mind you, we haven't gone through the whole permitting and that sort of thing, so that's a whole new, whole other thing to deal with. But we're fortunate to have John Hara and his architectural firm to work with us to do the planning part of this. It will allow us to bring more of the educational activities onto this main site.
Those art classes are a huge way that a great segment of the public interfaces with the museum, actually. Yeah. What kinds of changes have gone on there?
In the art classes? Mm-hmm. Are continuing the approach where we have many teachers teaching many different areas in the art, in art classes. We would like to, and we're working on this right now, they are spending more time in the museum now, showing their students examples of great art that we have in our collection, and using that for inspiration in their classes. So those changes are sort of moving along, but when we expand our facility, the hope is that we'll be able to develop that even further.
A student was telling me there have been some changes in registration for classes and so on.
We've sort of integrated some of our membership offerings with our classes. So if they used to be quite separate, but now if you're a member of the museum at a certain level, you're able to register for classes a day early, for example. So that encourages people to join the museum, and also we really want a lot of the art students to spend more time in the museum, because we think that would benefit their art education. Other aspects.
Night classes, though, the museum would never be open at night.
Reason why it couldn't be. I have to say, this is one of the first museums I worked at where we don't have night hours. Mm-hmm. And we are open during Art After Dark. Now, I'm not saying that you want to go and visit the museum to look at art during the festivities, though I think it's perfectly fine and
doable.
But we'll work on it. It's really aligning. The museum, in many ways, to me, represented, or rather was similar to what I saw in the arts community across Hawaii, which was, lots of wonderful things going on that didn't necessarily connect with one another. So my hope is that I can align more of our programs and have more of our projects integrated. Mm-hmm. For the benefit of our audience. That's really what it comes down to. But I also think that if we join ourselves with other institutions in talking about the value of a cultural education, then I think we can become more normalized, as it were, and particularly with the younger generation that doesn't see an institution like ours as a place they would go to every day. But once they start coming here, people usually go, "Wow, that's really amazing. I never knew, or I didn't realize how beautiful it was." So that's the other thing too. We try to get people in, so at least then they kind of realize for themselves that it's fantastic. Yeah. Another topic that you might eventually want to talk about is the cultural corridor and Thomas Square and Blaisdell.
Exactly.
Because that's another thing too that when we're looking at our expanded facilities and our activities, we're trying to see how we interact with the other cultural partners in this district.
When do you think, what's the timeline on that kind of stuff? I know there's a city planning process and McKinley's involved.
Our timeline is sort of the next 5 or so years.
Okay.
For some sort of completion, whether it's substantial completion or complete completion. But with regards to Blaisdell and other parts, I'd like to think it's within that sort of tenure.
And do you see?
But I'm not sure, because I know that there are a lot of
changes. Don't make any promises for them, right?
Yeah.
But do you see always? Continuing to use that Linacona property for art.
Yeah, we have a lease for 65 years, mm-hmm. So we'll use it. But we might be able to offer more things in there as we move more art education activities here on this site. We might be doing other activities there that are different.
Mm-hmm.
My view is really to kind of mix everything up versus sort of divide everything.